about the let me tell you about the chicken grease. Stuff some things to make the people get out the seat.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I am your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring satisfying tidbits of food culture. Our show hosts real conversations from everyday people navigating our food system and weekly chats with leaders in the world of sustainable food. Today, we'll be talking tasting awareness and the Hot Five with Tiffany Johnson. The leaves are changing colors and the air is brisk. Fall is here, y'all. For most people, autumn memories are linked to starting school and delightful foods. What are the great foods of fall? And who supplies breakfast and lunch to 31 million school children? In the studio, we have Natalie Soleil, owner of Tasting Awareness. Tasting Awareness educates people about sustainable food systems and live food preparation to improve well-being and raises consciousness. Natalie, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So, on Saturday, my mind shifted to baking ideas and pumpkins. What seasonal vegetables should we expect during this leaf-changing time?
Well, the good news is that leafy greens are coming back, not just kale, collards, broccoli, cauliflower, but also you're going to start seeing lettuces again at the farmer's market. And it's wonderful, easy to eat food.
So besides lettuce and all that stuff, what other things, like maybe fruits or?
Oh, well, the peppers are starting to come in really nicely. Eggplants. Tomatoes, as you know, had the tomato blight this year, so you're not going to find as much of them, but if you find some good ones,
so
it's perfect time.
Tomato blight? Can you give me a little details about what's going on with that?
The tomato blight is a fungus that, it's the same fungus, in fact, that hit the Irish potatoes and created the Irish potato famine. And tomatoes and potatoes, eggplant and peppers, are all in the same family. So the susceptibility can cross species. And the tomatoes in the Northeast got hit really hard by a tomato blight. They suspect it came in with plants that came in from big box stores, either Walmart or Home Depot. People planted them, and then the wind has blown the blight across tons of areas in the Northeast, spreading it and destroying thousands and thousands of dollars worth of the crop.
Are there any other fruits or vegetables we should be concerned about or had the same type of blight issues? Or particularly ones that are coming up this in the fall?
Well, there are some farmers worried about it spreading to their potatoes. I've heard the peppers are immune, and I think eggplant is immune too. But it's not going to make you sick. It's just the crop doesn't really serve you. If you open up a blighted tomato, it's rotted. So you're not gonna get sick from it. You're just not gonna end up eating the tomato.
So you talked a little bit about some veggies, fall veggies. Tell me about apples or fruits. I'm gonna miss the berries.
Yeah, they're pretty much over. You might get some blackberries this time of year. But yeah, it's a perfect season for apples and pears, and they look really good. There's some melon out now too, and if you're lucky, some watermelon. But New York State, if people don't already know, is a great producer of apples, and there are varieties named after all these cities upstate, like Cortland and Rome. There's Empire. I'd say try them all. They're all wonderful.
So speaking of apples, let's talk the U.S. government school lunch program. Chef Ann Cooper, also known as the Renegade Lunch Lady, was recently a guest on The Main Course, which airs every Sunday on Heritage Radio Network. She talked about the need to increase the budget of the Child Nutrition Act and some school lunch options. She talked about how some school lunch options are contributing to increased diabetes and childhood obesity. Some people may know that the Child Nutrition Act supplies breakfast and lunch to 31 million students, particularly students that may be low, that receive either reduced lunch or free lunch. What are your thoughts about the Child Nutrition Act and increased money towards that program?
Well, I think it's fantastic. I mean, you said $31 million?
31 million students are fed breakfast or lunch. Mm-hmm. And actually, the budget, the current annual budget, is $12 billion for the Child Nutrition Act.
Right. Well, to give you an idea, in addition to the $12 billion, part of what the school food systems do is they get stuff that the U.S. government subsidizes so much that there's surplus, so that the government buys it to keep the price up. That would include dairy products and meat. So the diet that school students are getting is pretty skewed towards meat and dairy. There's soy and corn products too. So it's, I mean, it's an imbalance because it doesn't have enough fruits and vegetables in it. And the prehistoric human diet was almost entirely vegetables and greens and raw foods. So there has to be a real comprehensive shift away from this belief that the U.S. government still has in feeding dairy and starch and meat to our kids as the primary food.
Yeah, I also want to just add that President Obama has included an extra $1 billion in his 2010 budget proposal for school foods. Do you think that's enough? Do they just need to throw money, or do you think it needs to be a comprehensive look at what's being served?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's complicated. I think $1 billion is not going to be enough, largely because of the way the food economy runs. We pay more for fruits and vegetables. So you're going to have to probably add a couple more billion and then shift spending overall so that less of it is going to meat, dairy, corn, and soybean products. And so you have to shift things. And I think when you shift and you add a couple billion, you might start approaching the solution. But there are other pieces to it. I think we shouldn't forget what Alice Waters has done out in California, where she's got school kids growing food in gardens, and then they're harvesting it and eating it. So there's a localism, there's a connection to the cycles of nature, and that's so powerful, because when people have a consciousness that there's tasty fruits and vegetables that they themselves have grown, it changes their eating patterns. And so there's an empowerment, too, in that these kids are starting to take care of themselves and their own food supply. And I think it's important for parents to know these things, too. I think that the knowledge factor in this country has yet to change. And that's going to, some of that money that's going to the school lunch needs to go to educate whomever's creating these meals.
Well, let me ask you this quick question. I know the last few weeks on the show, we've talked a little bit about Michelle Obama and her influence with school food, and just in general, the average American thinking about food a little differently. What are your thoughts about her influence and the influence in some of the things you talked about of people changing their overall eating habits?
Well, I'm not that familiar with the specifics of what she said, so if you want to refresh my memory, that would be fine.
Well, just more so her planting the garden at the White House.
Which is fantastic.
And her constant advocacy work around gardening and farmers market, eating healthy.
Well, I think that being an example in the White House is beyond incredible. And I think because there's a lot of African Americans who suffer from obesity and diabetes, and she's an African American woman in the White House, she may have even more influence on a population that needs an example. And I'm one of the first advocates of going to a farmer's market, going to your community garden, learning to grow your own. The reality is they're a very small percentage of the food supply in terms of where consumers are buying their food. So we have to be honest and look at the entire food system, which has supermarkets, bodegas, food co-ops, and also food pantries, and government surplus silos in some cases. as other places where people are spending their money, or if it's not money, vouchers. And we have to really systematically address the problems of the food supply in those venues.
I think that's a very valid point about Michelle Obama being an example, and some of the latter points you had as well. After a short break, Natalie, you're going to join us for the next segment. We're going to talk more about tasting awareness. And we'll be back with Natalie Soleil and Tasting Awareness.
Why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds and canyons of steel. They're making me feel I'm home. It's autumn in New York that brings the promise of new love. Autumn in New York is often mingled with pain. With empty hands may sigh for exotic lands. It's autumn in New York, it's good to live it again. Autumn in New York, the gleaming rooftops at sundown.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. In addition, if we have any listeners who would like to call in live, our number is area code 718-497-2128. We're continuing our conversation with Natalie A. Soleil of Tasting Awareness. Tasting Awareness' mission is to empower everyone through teaching healthy food preparation based on raw and living food, recreating health and sustainability. Natalie, tell us more about Tasting Awareness.
Well, Tasting Awareness is an organization I founded last year after having spent 4 years as a produce buyer and a manager at a local food co-op here in New York City. And one of the missions of the co-op was outreach. And it was really very poorly addressed. So we were supplying good food, but it only was going to people who knew we existed or who knew about good food and looked us up. We had not really made the connection with the surrounding community actively in providing a lot of very necessary health information. And so I was in a partnership last year, and it was on the condition that we were to educate the public, because I really feel very strongly that too much of health food, organic food, is something that people only perceive as available to people with money. And it's marketed towards people with money. It's not marketed and really targeted in an affordable price point to people who don't have money and are often, as we know from statistics, in greatest need. And obesity and diabetes and heart disease they affect rich people too in this country. But the proportions among people who don't have money and don't have education are much higher. And it's a public health crisis. So if people who have knowledge don't impart it to people who need it, they're doing everyone a disservice.
your mission at Tasting Awareness, is it only centered around raw and living food?
No. It's raw and living food is one of the anchors of it because of the profound imbalance in the average American diet. And the other reason is not just the imbalance, but there's a sustainability to the environment that is enhanced by eating more raw and living food. But the real objective is for people to eat better, to take control of their diet, to take control of their food supply ultimately, and be healthy. And that requires a shift in general towards eating fresh fruits and vegetables.
This may be a crazy question to some, but what exactly is raw and living food?
Well, raw food is, like it says, raw. And there's a whole movement based on raw food because chimpanzees, whom we're most closely related to, eat raw food. And there's a lot of argument to eat more like chimpanzees. This requires eating a very large number of greens and fruits, a small number of nuts and seeds, and grub, except that raw foodists don't eat animal matter at all. So the point I see is very important in raw food is it's got enzymes. And enzymes are what help us to digest food. From growing up in the Western culture and eating a lot of cooked food, we've used up a lot of our enzymes. Raw food has them. So eating a salad every day is going to give you enzymes that will help you digest other things you eat.
Quick point of clarification, or more so, I'm just trying to figure out and put it in my head. So if I look at a regular person's diet or the average American's diet versus a person that eats raw and living, what are some of the things would be in the average person's diet that a person that's eating fairly healthy and a person that's eating raw and living?
You mean compare them?
Or more so just give examples of types of food that would be in each category.
Okay, well, I would say that there's a lot of avocados and coconut and nut cheeses and nut milks and sesame seed and sunflower seed and pumpkin seed foods and often mixed with sweets in a raw foodist's diet, whereas an American might eat, say, sweets made out of dairy products or peanut butter or chocolate. And in terms of protein, raw foodists will get it through sprouts and through the nuts and seeds and through the vegetables themselves. People forget that broccoli and kale have a lot of protein. And there's no grain in a raw food diet. There's no legumes and no meat, no dairy.
Really? I always assume that... that's very interesting. Why did I assume that rice and legumes, all that stuff, it's in raw food diet?
Well, I think as you think, oh, sprout it, you'll eat it raw, but you really shouldn't be eating sprouted rice or sprouted beans raw. I mean, they're hard on the digestion.
What do you mean sprouted? What's
okay? Right? Yeah, so when we talk about living food, we're talking about sprouted food. With sprouting is what Mother Nature does when you put a seed in the ground. And you can sprout anything that's a seed. Some are harder to sprout than others if anyone's tried to grow an avocado from seed. But what sprouting does is it converts the energy of take a bean seed. It converts the stored energy that feeds a plant embryo from fatty and protein-rich and concentrated carbohydrates, the starchiness, into a form that a plant will use. So it metabolizes the fat, the protein, the starch into more digestible forms for humans. It also releases enzymes. It generates vitamins. And in some cases, it's extremely nutritious. You can sprout broccoli seeds and they're apparently cancer fighting. So if we look at Japanese and Chinese cooking, they've been sprouting mung beans and soybeans for centuries, maybe eons.
So what advice do you give to the individual that's on a budget or someone with limited access to healthy foods?
Well, I'd say it's worth it to travel and get some store supplies that you can use. You know, go and take a trip and get some staples like some beans and some legumes that you can sprout. I get short grain brown rice because that actually sprouts better than long grain. I'd get some of your, if you like chickpeas, get chickpeas. If you like lentils, get lentils. Lentils are good because they're much easier to digest than most other legumes. And I'd say start sprouting those before you cook them. And it's not that hard to find out about sprouting. If you want, I can give a little primer right now. And
Sure. We have probably about 10, 20 seconds. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, you're going to soak your rice or your beans overnight. The next morning, you're going to rinse them and strain them. And then you're going to cover them with a cheesecloth or some other mesh so no bugs get into it. But you're going to drain them well, and you're going to rinse them 8 hours later and drain them again. And basically what you're doing is you're preventing mold from forming, and the moisture will allow the rice or the beans to convert into plants. They're going to germinate, if you remember that from elementary school when you germinated seeds. Once they start germinating, you can cook them. You're going to need much less water. They're going to cook much faster. Beans are going to be less gassy. Short grain brown rice tastes nutty. And it also has chemicals that will make you feel good emotionally.
So, Natalie, how can listeners get a hold of you? Do you have a website that you can let the listeners know about if they wanted to reach out to you?
Absolutely. I've got a website. It's www.tastingawareness.org. That's TASTINGAWARENESS.org. And my contact information is there. Feel free to email me, and I can consult with people if they want to put them on the right track. And I do say, whatever limited budget you have, allocate as much as you can to what you eat, because your body comes first before the clothing you put on it. So if you have to add an extra 10 or 20, if you can, take it out of your clothing or your entertainment budget. But go to the places that have the freshest produce, buy leafy greens, and stay away from potatoes, and buy something like sweet potatoes instead if you can.
Natalie A. Soleil,
yes.
Thank you for joining us on Hot Grease.
It's been my pleasure.
We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Our goal each week on Hot Grease is to host conversations with ordinary people navigating our food systems. Today, we have Harlem resident Tiffany Capri Johnson with her Hot Five. Thank you for joining us, Tiffany.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
So today, Tiffany will be doing the Hot Five. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorite. So, Tiffany,
okay.
How long have you lived in Harlem, and where are you originally from?
I've lived in Harlem for about 6 years now. I'm originally from Philadelphia area, but I've lived all around the country.
All right, Uptown Girl, hit us with your Hot Five and a brief description of each one.
Okay. I did my Hot Five on five places that you can find local food in Harlem. When I first moved to Harlem 6 years ago, I was hard-pressed to find anything organic or local or even really attractive produce in any of the grocery stores. A few mothers and I started a CSA in our neighborhood, which is Community Supported Agriculture. It's called the Kitchen Table Project Harmony CSA, and that is my first Hot Five item. Basically what we do is we buy a share in the farm. Our farmer's name is Claudio. We have a relationship with him. And from June till November, he gives us fresh food from his farm in New Jersey. He delivers it every Thursday. We pick it up in the garden. It's a real, like, community event. We actually, before he drops out the food, a couple of moms meet there, and we cook on the grill. Then he delivers the food, and then community members from the neighborhood come and each pick up their share.
Okay. Number two on your Hot Five list.
Okay, number two is Citarella. It's the gourmet food store located in various locations in New York. There's one located on West 125th Street near Amsterdam Avenue.
That's right near Columbia? Is that near Columbia? Or
It's a little up from Columbia. And they are a great little market. And they actually accept food stamps, which is really important in Harlem. A lot of people have food stamps here, and the options are not that great. So it's great that they're able to get, like, quality local food using food stamps. My third item is Fairway, which is located at 130th Street and 12th Avenue, and the store is huge. It's, like, can be pretty overwhelming, but they have a good selection of local produce and meat and dairy from local farms.
Why is it always so cold in that Fairway?
They have, if you've ever been there, the meat and the dairy products are actually in a separate room where you're supposed to wear a coat to go in. And instead of having, like, a little freezer section, it's basically like a grocery store where everything's set on, like, high shelves, but it's just that is the frozen area.
It's always freezing. What's the location of the Fairway?
It's on 130th Street at 12th Avenue.
Okay.
Then my fourth item is Fresh Direct, which it may not be the most environmentally friendly, but as a mother of small children, it's really helped me to get into local produce in the first place. They carry local dairy, vegetables, fruit, even local duck and seafood. They don't deliver to all areas of Harlem, but hopefully as the demand increases, they'll expand their delivery area.
I have a quick question. I actually shop Fresh Direct. And they have, increased their local product and organic selection. What are your thoughts about that? Do you find that very convenient when you're looking for local, sustainable food? Fresh Direct does it make it easier for you to kind of pick out the local and organic stuff?
Yeah, they actually have a section as soon as you log on, and it just says local. So I'll usually go, I don't do all local food, but usually that's where I'll start, and I'll just look at local, and then I'll pick out all the things that I want from there, from that section, and then I'll, you know, look on the rest of the website for all the other things I get.
Okay. And your final hot five in Harlem?
Is Green Market. It's a network of farmers markets throughout the city, and they have about four locations in Harlem. And basically, yeah, it's just farmers markets. They have varying hours, mostly. I think the ones in Harlem are open mostly on the weekends, and it's great to go there, meet the farmers. All their local produce comes from within about 90 miles, and the actual farmer has to man his stand. So you get to meet the farmers when you buy your produce there.
I didn't know that. The actual farmer has to be there. That's great. Tiffany, thank you so much for sharing your hot five with us. And hopefully I'll get uptown soon and check out some of the spots.
Okay. Thanks, Nicole.
Have a great one. Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. In the coming weeks, we'll be talking Tweet of the Week. That's Twitter. And we'll be highlighting some of the very exciting food tweets of the week. We'll be talking about the WIC program, which is the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, Modern Social Etiquette at the Holidays. Until then, always take the road less traveled.